All right, so welcome back to our public hearing on August 11th. The next case we're going to hear is case 6874, Cascades Plaza LLC. So for the appellant, can you state your name for the record?
Jordan Hardman.
Okay, and can you spell your last name, please?
H-A-R-M-A-N.
Okay, Mr. Hardman. And for the core?
Heike Redden.
Thank you, ma'am. Ms. Redden has already been sworn in from earlier case. So, Mr. Hardman, I ask you to raise your right hands. Do you swear that the evidence you shall give in this matter shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? So help you God.
I do.
All right, thank you. So let the record show that Mr. Hardman has been sworn in. Mr. Hardman, you're here last year before, right? Okay, so I don't have to give the whole spiel, but yeah, you'll present your case, Coral will present their case, and then at that point, I'll manage the conversation. Please address the board. I'll be looking at both you and the board members to see if people want to say something. So, you know, even board members, they need to raise their hands. Did you guys do that? We don't always follow that sometimes, but yeah. So and then I'll acknowledge you and give you a chance to speak. So, if there's something that sounds crazy, you know, like just raise your finger, look at me. I'll acknowledge that and make sure that you have a chance to address it. So,
okay.
And then once we do that, then board members ask questions. Once they stop asking questions, or I feel like we're going over and over again, then I'll call for a motion. And at that point, the board, it's just the board's discussion. And the board can ask questions, but and I'll direct folks to respond to them. So that said, Mr. Hardman, take it away.
Yes, just to confirm, we're on Cascades Plaza, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So this property, the basis for the appeal is what is an appropriate cap rate to apply to the assessment. Looking at this property, this specific property, its actual condition and age location as of the date of the assessment, this property, it's a three-star Class B retail strip center. It was 23 years old as of the date of value. Looking at the various cap rate sources, we see the county has presented some. However, there's issues with several of these. First, PwC is cited. PwC is an institutional-grade survey. They survey only institutional-grade investors. So that survey is very specific. And what you see because of that is institutional-grade is a higher quality, a higher, or better product overall. And so what you see with these surveys, when you review them year after year after year, PwC is always the lowest because it's asking investors, institutional investors, which are pension funds, sovereign wealth funds. I think I've read the largest one in the country. It's like the Singapore Sovereign Wealth Fund, something you wouldn't have expected. But it's these institutional-grade investors who want to place large sums of money all at once, and they want to guarantee that they're going to get that back with some amount of profit. So they're looking at properties that are fully leased for long terms, that are the newest properties that they know. Essentially, they want to make a little more than they can on T-bills. So they're going for essentially prime plus one, prime plus two. They're not going for some of these higher returns. So what institutional investors are doing is getting the best properties they can find, and usually larger ones too, because they have billions of dollars typically. So they want to place $100 million at a time. They don't want to do $2, $3, $4 million properties. So that's all a long way of saying PwC is a very specific survey of very specific investors for a very specific product type. So this property, being three-star, Class B, 23 years old, it's not really appropriate to rely on PwC to create to pull the cap rate from that. Now we do move into the next survey that the county cites is the RERC survey. Now RERC, something unique about this survey that's not included in all surveys is they actually break out three different tiers of properties. So they have first tier, second tier.
Excuse me, Mr. Hardman, yeah. Is this information in your
So this is
submission.
Page 8 of the county's submission. I'm going through their cap rate survey.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Oh, no, that's my
fault. Because I saw the PWCI on the first page of yours.
And we did mistakenly cite to that. That was supposed to be this next survey cited to the RERC. And it was a mistake for the given reasons that PWC is not appropriate to do that. And you can see the cap rate that we cited corresponds to the RERC. It was just a typo on the PWC versus RERC. But RERC does provide different tiers. They provide first tier, second tier, third tier properties, and they give definitions for each of those as well. So that's instructive. You know, that gives you a little more applicability to specific properties. It's not just this is what the best of the best properties are, which is what PWC does. RERC allows you to go into a little more property-specific characteristics. So that surveys definitions for the three different tiers. First tier are properties that are new or newer quality construction in prime to good locations. Second tier, properties that are aging, former first tier properties in good to average locations. And third tier properties are older properties with functional inadequacies or in marginal locations. So from those definitions of the RERC survey, the appropriate survey to look at from the RERC survey is that second tier. Because this property, again, is 3-star, Class B, 23 years old. It fits in that definition nicely of aging, former first-tier properties, and good to average locations. So once you go to the RERC second tier, and this isn't on the county submission, this is, but it is widely publicized. It's all in one report, so it's not separate surveys that you have to go to. The RERC Tier 2, second tier range for this property type is 7.5% at the low end, which is what the assessment has applied. It goes up to 11.1% at the high end. The average of that range, according to this survey, is 8.9%. And that's what we've built our appeal value. We've imputed a cap rate just under that average of the second tier RERC survey. Now, I do want to mention also on this RERC, it looks like the county support cites a going-in cap rate for Washington, D.C. specific. If you look at the report, there is an asterisk next to that, and it says that data is pulled from May of 2022. It is lower than where it currently is, but that's because it's an outdated figure. That actually goes back to May of 2022, almost 3 full years prior to the data value. So if you get the current data, it does have an average of 8.9% with, again, that range of 7.5 to 11%. Now, the county also provides support based on sale comps, but if you go through these sales, you have 4 sale comps. The first two are really not comparable to the subject property. The first two are more or less standalone retail buildings. They're very small, 5,000 square feet and 6,000 square feet properties. The subject property is over 20,000 square feet. It is 20,300 square feet. So it's a much different product type. You're going to attract different investors. It's going to have different tenancies. So a 20,000 square foot strip center, like the subject, is going to have your typical mix. It's going to have, you'll have a hairdresser, a dry cleaner, a restaurant. You'll have this eclectic, neighborhood strip center mix. These first two sale comps are more or less, one's a Five Guys with one other retail bay, I believe. The other one is a 7-Eleven and a couple of restaurants. Again, 5,000 and 6,000 square feet. The subject's over 20,000. Those are both 2023 sales, by the way.
Are you showing? Are you talking about something that's in the package? Because I'm not.
Yes, I'm sorry. I'll cite to it. It is in the county's response on page 3.
Page 3?
Yes.
In Core's package.
Yeah.
So going through these, you see the first two, they look quite a bit higher than the second two, and that's why. They're different properties. You have the first one at 828 a foot, which, by the way, that is a very high outlier that from all of the regions of Northern Virginia that I've come across. And that's partially because it was an individual who bought it. It was a high net worth individual who just decided to dip their toe into real estate and came up with that value. The second sale, 583, again, quite a bit higher than the third and fourth sale, and that's because it's a different product type. It's 5,000 square feet versus 20,000. You're going to have different investors. You're going to have different tenancies. And as you get into these larger strip shopping centers, it's going to take a different type of investor, it's going to be less mom and pop, like the first two may be. You know, maybe you have some, you know, $3, $4 million you want to invest in some commercial real estate. That's where you go. These bottom two sales are more comparable. They are, one of them is comp 3, 46,000 Old Ox Road. That one's pretty similar as far as size. It's 18,300 square feet. The subject property, again, 20,300 square feet. That sale count 3 sold for $210 per square foot in March of last year. So that property is more comparable in terms of size. It's also closer to the date of value than the first two sales, which were from 2023.
You're saying Axer property sold last year?
Yes. So that property, sale comp 3, 46,000 Old Ox, sold in March of 2024. And then the fourth sale is kind of in between. It's 10,600 square feet. That property sold in July of 24 for the $396 per square foot is what CoStar showed. I see the county has 412, but those properties are going to be more comparable to the subject property. And if you take the average of those two, you get $311 a foot on the most recent comparable sales that occurred in the county. So $311 a foot. The current assessment on the subject property is $384. Our appeal value is at $352. So it's still placing it above the average of those two sales that occurred last year. A little closer to the higher of those two sales, but still in the middle of those. Now, and on this one, again, the assessment's $384. We were at 352. Those two sale counts that are actually comparable, 311. That is supportive of our cap rate that we've chosen based on using the appropriate cap rate source for this property. That's all I have. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Ms. Reddin.
Okay. We used an income approach on this property. There's two buildings to this, the strip mall building, and then there's a convenience gas station. We used an income approach based on the 2023 income that was provided to us. So the subject property is valued at $384.34 per square foot. The comparables, as pointed out, range from $210 to $828, which we fall in there. Equity comps range from $328.27 to $464.43, we fall in there. The reason we included both the equity and the sales, they're important because the Loudoun County cap rate is actually a lot lower than what we use. We use for the cap rate development a variety of different sources and different cap rates to make sure we cover all our bases, but like I said, the Loudoun County one is a lot lower. Hand cherry picking one cap rate from one publication, PwC apparently isn't the one that to use yet. It is referenced in the appellant's package that the PwC third quarter is the one to use, and that is at 7.3 average, which falls within our cap rate development. The age, I want to address, the equity comps are ranging between, they're built in 2002 to, as old as 1989. The subject property is built in 2002. So what we would see here on the assessed side would be very different if this was an issue. If we would see that, equity comps are different differently or lower valued, we would see a much bigger range. And same with the sales comparison. There is one in 1981. And again, we're not just picking one to lean on. We're looking at these and then saying, okay, what is going on there? And there's a 2015 bill that is 583. So if that was the case, if the sales for older properties would be so much different, then we would see it there.
Okay. Mr. Tandale?
Let me ask one question. You submitted the P&L account for December 2023, right? So in that, I see there is amortization expense and depreciation. What's the difference between these two?
Let me see. I'm not familiar off the top of my head, but
what page are you on?
Last one. I think it's
page 6.
Okay.
Yep.
Is it?
After this thing ending.
Can you make it bigger?
It's from the back. He's counting.
Yeah.
Three pages from the back. It doesn't have a page number. It says page 1.
Page 1, it says, but it's not in the last.
Okay, let me see. So we typically take that out of our analysis.
Oh, I see. It's page 11.
All right, you're talking about the Cascade Plaza Shopping Center profit and loss January through December 2023.
Right.
Okay.
So this should be, if you go to the pages prior to that, the county's I&E form, that should be adjusted to remove amortization and depreciation as well as some of these other.
For what purpose is amortization? Because both are same actually. If you are replacing an asset, you say amortization of expense, you put it. But depreciation also is depreciating the asset. Usually these two do not go together, but I'm asking what is the basis for, is these accounts audited or?
So, Mr., before you answer that, the appellant has been sworn in that they're giving truthful testimony.
Right.
They don't have to be audited. So I just want to make it clear. I mean, there's certain things that we can ask, but it's up to the appellant if they want to share.
I was just curious.
So in other words, it doesn't really matter if it's audited, mm-hmm. if he's giving true testimony.
No.
And I'll answer it this way. Amortization and depreciation, we don't actually deal with in our business because it doesn't factor into the assessment.
Right.
Those are paper losses, and they're not
actual
annual income and expenses. Yes. So this one should be this page 7 should have been adjusted for both the I&E and for page 1 of our documentation to remove that, because there's a couple of other items included on page 7 that aren't typically included with for appraising real estate, and so that would be. Just saw some. So real estate taxes, those are removed. Yeah, so let me see. I can verify that. So, yeah, that page 7 is reporting a net income of $484,000. If you go to page 1, you'll see that we did adjust for several of those items to get to NOI of $679,000. So that, I guess the best way I can explain it is that page 7 is their internal bookkeeping.
Okay.
And then once you get it and you apply it to real estate valuation, you adjust that to remove certain expenses such as depreciation and amortization.
Non-cash expenses.
Correct. You remove those. And I didn't see any on when I glanced at the income portion, but if there's income items that are one-offs that wouldn't be included, you would adjust for that too. So that's why I don't have a lot of knowledge of amortization and depreciation, because we just remove it. We don't deal with it.
I was just curious. Oh, that's
okay. Other board member questions? Everybody's looking at the numbers right now. Does either appellant or the court have something they want to mention right now?
Well, I would just like to point out, if you look at this page here and you look at the NOI before real estate taxes, these are the different years that the appellant, so 2022 would have been used for 2024, 2023 income for 2024, and so on. If you look at those NOIs,
yes,
those three, and then the very one on the stabilized potential, they're all higher than the NOI I came up with of 652. So everything points to the fact that this should be valued higher.
Right.
It just using, you know, some other cap rate doesn't really make it right.
And I think that illustrates the point of getting the cap rate right.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can come in with an NOI too low, as, you know, we don't contest the county's NOI. And as they just stated, they did. But the value would still be wrong by applying an incorrect cap rate.
And did the appellant also give any rental agreement or lease agreements to you? Did they share it?
The rent roll?
Because is there any provision like the lease amounts will go up like 5%, 10% each year or something? Is there any clause?
The rent roll is on page... On my packet in the second to last,
okay,
that's the 2023 rent roll.
Mm-hmm.
But the you know, we apply this uniformly. This cap rate is applied uniformly to this group, small income, small shopping centers.
Right.
So we can't just cherry pick a cap rate for a property.
Okay.
And so we're using the 7.5 uniformly across
okay
the group. There's no
percentage.
Mm-hmm.
And I may address that.
Yes, sir.
So that's fair on the initial appraisal, the mass appraisal. That's
right.
My understanding is the county's methodology. But once an individual property is appealed, you review that property specifically. And there are instances where, you know, the Article 10 of the Virginia Constitution, Section 1 and Section 2, state that all assessments are to be uniform, is Section 1, and then Section 2 says they're all supposed to be at their fair market value. So those two items, as you can understand and see here, run into conflict sometimes. Because the county's saying, we applied this cap rate uniformly. And we're saying, no, when you look at this specific property, it results in a value that's greater than fair market value. So you're kind of, you know, at loggerheads between Section 1 and Section 2, which one wins out. And the Supreme Court of Virginia has ruled multiple times that essentially uniformity is not a safe harbor for assessments that are in excess of fair market value. So when they're in conflict, fair market value takes precedence and the taxpayer is entitled to the lower of fair market value or uniformity. So they could have a uniform assessment that gets them below fair market value. That's to their benefit.
Did you mention to the court about the Supreme Court ruling or whichever, did you view in writing?
Well, I'll have to see if... I assume they were familiar with it, since it is
yes,
the governing...
Yes, you did, because I remember from last year in one of our cases.
Yeah, that is the governing law, so I would assume it's...
Which is recorded, so... So, Mr. Harmon, what cap rate are you proposing should be used?
So we proposed a cap rate of 8.5% as a base cap rate before the tax rate's loaded on, so... if you look at page 1 of our submission, you'll see we do break out base cap rate and the tax rate add-on. So a base cap of 8.5. Once you add on the tax rate, you get a loaded cap rate of 9.365.
Okay. Ms. Redden, what was the uniform one?
7.5.
Okay. Okay. So I guess my question, Ms. Redden, would be, can you speak to Mr. Harmon's comment about the fact that equity versus fair market value and which takes precedence and when you have an appeal of a specific property?
So we would see if you can go back to our cap rates, the sales that have the cap rates. Just down. Further down. right there, the Loudoun County sales and the cap rates, this is what we are seeing in Loudoun County. We don't see any 8.5, and we would not just look at one property. So we're looking at these four cap rates of these four properties that have sold in Loudoun County in the last 2 years. And they basically come out at 6.12%. And that is a big indicator of what's happening in the county. I don't see any 8.5, you know, cumulative. So if there were older properties selling for way different, we would see it here. We would see it in the equity comps. We would see it all over, and we just don't.
Okay. Mr. Harmon, did you want
to... Just make sure you're comparing applicable comps to the subject property. You know, we saw on the equity comps and on their sales comps on page 3 of the county submission, some of those are not the same types of properties. You know, a Dunkin' Donuts 5,000 square foot retail is going to have a different pool of buyers than a 20,000 square foot strip center. It takes a different level of management expertise to kind of get into that type of property. So therefore, you will see discrepancies between sale prices because they're different products. The bottom two sales that the county's provided, which average, those are the 2024 sales, and those average 311 a foot. Those are more comparable to the subject.
Actually, the X property had major, it was a private individual who sold this. And during this transaction, it is important to note that the real estate itself sold for $2,250,000, and the remaining $1.613 million of the transaction was comprised of a note given to the seller from the buyer with undisclosed terms. So even though it's in there, it's not the one that we would rely on most.
That's the 4600 Olox Road?
Yes.
Which is Axe Properties on
yes.
The other page? Got it.
Excuse me.
Yes, Mr. Few.
Because there was a note involved, why would you exclude that from being a valid sale if it's recorded at an X number of dollars?
Because you don't know what it is. You don't know the terms. What? You don't know the anything, really. We didn't exclude it because it was a sale that occurred in Loudoun County. But it's not the one that you would most rely on with these kinds of stipulations.
All right, I would comment that if I were the purchaser and instead of having some owner financing, I went to the bank and borrowed the money, nobody knows what the terms were at the bank. So what difference does it make? You've recorded a certain specific amount of money as the sale price, and that should be what is the driving factor to...
But there could be all kinds of preferential, you know, you just don't know what it is. So when
you don't know when you go to the bank.
But typically in COSTA, if there is something like this, that these two aspects of this transaction ended up, you know, equaling the total, but they are not sure what this undisclosed amount is.
Okay.
It's really not a good sale. We could have taken it out and said, you know, we don't really feel this is a valuable market sale for this group, but we left it in because it's such a recent sale.
Okay.
But it's not the one we would lean on the most and say, oh, this is the one we...
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Board members, any more questions? Okay. Are we ready for a motion? Okay. All right. So let me summarize what I think the issue is, which Mr. Harmon basically said it up front. So by the way, thank you. Is that it's just a difference in the cap rate and which cap rate you should be using in order to value the property. Mr. Harmon has found one source, but a reputable, reliable source that he believes should be used, and the county has determined a standard sort of average rate. I shouldn't say average, but a set rate that they would use for all the properties based on sales that are going on in Loudoun County and their methodology for coming up with that. The difference is a 1% in the cap rate, which does equate, because when you figure the valuation, you got to divide the number. So the larger number is a smaller valuation, smaller cap rate, larger valuation, hence the difference. Did I summarize that?
Well, if you go to my last page, so the cap rate development, we're using multiple sources. We're using PwC fourth quarter, we're using RERC fourth quarter, and then we're using our sales. We're not just using, you know, one determined by the county. We are including other sources to make sure we are covering our bases.
Okay. All right, Mr. Kearse.
I move to affirm the CORE's assessment on this property, a land value of $2,046,200, improved value of $5,751,280, total value of $7,797,480.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Mr. Fugue is seconded.
Yeah, because, again, it seems to come down to the cap rate. I think the CORE has demonstrated they use a uniform rate from multiple sources to come to that rate. And I would notice and note they also use the lower NOI to calculate the value than what the appellant has supplied in their package, which if you use that actual rate, it would actually increase the tax value, and I'm not going to go there. So for those reasons, that's why I support the CORE's value.
Any further comments or questions, board members? Okay, all those in favor of the motion, raise your hand and say aye.
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 All right, that passes 5-0.
All right. Mr. Harmon, thank you.
Thank you.
Are you on the next one? Are you on the next one too?
Yeah, okay. I believe so.
Awesome.
Oh.
Oh, but we got a new face. So we got to square somebody in.
Which is the next? Is it 6883?
Yeah.
Yes.
6883. We are still recording, just as a reminder for people. All right. So we will move into appeal case number 6883, Sterling Park Parcel 12 LLC. For the appellant, can you state your name for the record?
Jordan Harmon.
Thank you. And for the CORE, can you state your names individually?
Shadirin Wesley.
And can you spell that for us?
C-H-I-D-I-R-I-N-M-W-A-Z-U-E.
Oh, hold on a second. It's in the report, right? Oh, I can just say that. Okay. And Ms. Redden, are you going to be testifying on this case as well?
I stay, yes.
Okay. All right. Nwazi?
Yes.
Nwazu?
Wesley.
Nwazwe?
Yes.
Ms. Nwazwe, I'm going to apologize ahead of time, but hopefully I get it right. Ms. Nwazwe, I need to swear you in, so if you can raise your right hand. Do you swear that the evidence you shall give in this matter shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Yes.
Thank you. The record state, Ms. Nwazwe has been sworn in. Ms. Redden and Mr. Harmon have already been sworn in from prior case. I think everybody knows the process, so Mr. Harmon, I'll defer to you.
Yes, thank you. So this property has had a single tenant going back to 2007, at least. That was the earliest record I could find. It was GSA, had leased the entire property, going back to at least 2007. I believe it was DEA specifically occupied it during that time. On page 7 of our submission, you'll see on November 27th of last year, GSA gave formal written notice of exercising their right to terminate their lease effective March 28th of this year. So that was in place as of the first of the year. If our exercise is essentially as of January 1st, what would a willing buyer and willing seller come to an agreement at as a value for this property? They're going to know the only tenant is not going to be there 3 months after January 1st. And so they're going to come up with a value accordingly. And typically how you do that is you disregard the current tenant because they're only there 3 more months. You may, oftentimes you'll see they'll take what's called excess income, which would be the rent that that tenant's paying above market, and add that below the line to account for those 3 months that you would have beneficial ownership of that above market rent. But other than that, above the line, you're going to value the property as if it's 100% vacant, which it will be, and that's known as of the first of the year. So knowing that, you know, you have the lease details of the former tenant who's known to be vacating, but of course you're not going to, when you're valuing January 1, you're looking at anticipated income streams. So you're not going to project that tenant's income stream into perpetuity as remaining because we know they're leaving. So with that, where do you come up with market rents, market expenses? This property, we actually looked right across the street. So this property is 22400 Shaw Road. Directly across the street is 22461 Shaw Road. We included the county's current assessment on that property. That is on page 6 of the appeal. Thank you. And we said, okay, what is the county assumed for that property? That property is 100% occupied. It's a subsidiary of Boeing, some sort of IT data management division. Right across the street from the subject, built in 2000. Both properties are three-star Class B properties. Both properties are classified on the county's website as being commercial, industrial, and flex warehouses. So same classification, right across the street from each other, similar year built, both three-star Class Bs. So that's fair. That's a fair assessment comp to look for market rents, market expenses, and what have you. Well, that property for this year is assessed at a rental rate of $1,690 a foot. It has operating expenses at $350 a foot and a cap rate of 8.2%. Now, that obviously compares with the subject property. Rent is a little higher, $18 a foot. Expenses are a little lower at $2 a foot. And the cap rate's much lower at 6% versus the 8.2% base rate. So what we've done with our analysis, which is on page, I believe, 3 of our submission, I'm sorry, 4 of our submission, is we took those assumptions by the county that they've used to assess the property across the street. We said, keep the rental rate the same as that one across the street, $1,690 a foot, even though, you know, that's indicative of market according to the county's assessment. Use the same vacancy rate of 5%. Use the operating expenses from that assessment comp across the street of $350 a foot. We use the cap rate of 8.2% from that neighboring property. And you'll see right under the 8.2 on our market potential column, we did add what's called a high vacancy adjustment. Now, this is to account for the increased risk.
So what page? You said page 4. I'm not fine.
This one? Page 4 of, yes.
On the screen,
take a look. Got it.
So we added the high vacancy adjustment, and that's because the cap rate, of course, consists of a return of capital, return on capital, and a risk premium. So this property is going to be riskier than the property across the street because the property across the street is fully leased for several years. This property is only leased for 3 months as of the first of the year. So that risk premium, 1.25% to account for a fully vacant property, that was actually derived from Fairfax County, applies a similar risk premium to high vacancy properties. That's where that came from. That got us to our capitalized value that you can see there. And from there, we took a discount for lease up below the line, which is going to account for the cost of re-tenanting that property once it's vacant. You're going to have to pay a nominal amount of build-out for a new tenant at market rates. You're going to have to pay a leasing broker commissions to get that space leased up. You're also going to lose rental income that's been imputed above the line, but until it leases up, you're not actually earning that. So that is all accounted for in that discount for lease up below the line. So essentially, that's what we did. That's how we valued it. We said, we have this property. We know that GSA has been in there since at least 2007. They've been paying well above market rents. You know, these are rents that aren't seen in this area. But that's not going to be continuing. And if we're a buyer coming in and saying, how do I value this property as of January 1, knowing there's this written termination letter, I'm going to reset everything to market, and I'm going to put together an income approach as if the property is vacant. We're going to go back to market rents, market expenses, market cap rate, and then increase deductions for the risk of the high vacancy and the cost of getting a new tenant in there. Now, briefly, I do want to address the county's submission of comps. So these we're seeing, this is going to be page two of the county submission. You see some comps that they've provided. Now, these comps, the main distinction, every one of these is 100% occupied. That's going to be a different valuation completely than a property that's 100% vacant. You know, it's simply different products. You're much riskier with a fully vacant building than you are with a fully occupied property. So every one of those comps listed there, all five of them, 100% occupied. Some of them are Class A, some are Class B. Obviously, better classes should have higher assessments, but overall, the main difference between those comps and the subject property is those comps are all 100% occupied. Subject property is known to be 100% vacant 3 months after the date of value. Then the sale comps that the county's provided on page three, the bottom of that page. Going through those, we see similar issues. Comp 1, 454497 Way, 95.3% leased at sale. Second comp, 22620 Davis Drive, 100% leased at sale. There's a note on CoStar that says that property transaction was actually a sale leaseback, which the appraisal of real estate, the textbook on appraisal practice, says that you need to use extreme caution with sale leasebacks. It's more of a financing maneuver than it is a fair market sale. Some of the issues that can arise with that, as you can imagine, are, hey, I'm the owner, you know, I'm occupying it, so I'm not paying myself rent, so we need to get a lease in place for the new owner. Well, if you give me a little more on the front end at the purchase price, I'll give you a little more on the lease, or vice versa. You know, you can work out all different types of maneuvers with a sale leaseback. Overall takeaway per the textbook is use extreme caution with sale leasebacks. It is a financing maneuver generally and not a market sale. Sale comp 3, 45900 Old Docks Road, again 100% leased at sale. The next one, comp 4, 22990 Indian Creek Drive, 100% leased at sale. That lease runs through 2033.
How do you know that information by looking at this?
So I pulled this from CoStar once we received the county's case.
That's fine. Thank you.
Then the final sale, 101 Oaklawn, that's a brand new construction. It was vacant at sale. However, the purchaser was JK Moving Services, which I'm sure you all being local to the area are familiar with JK Moving Services and kind of some of their real estate plays that they've had. But they've had... they've paid a premium for a lot of property that they think can be data centers, potentially. So that would be a little bit different of a type of property than this one. But suffice it to say, four of the five sales were 100% occupied at sale. Subject property, again, going back to the overall theme of this case, is known to be 100% vacant due to the termination agreement sent by the government to the owner. With that, I'll be open for questions and appreciate your all's time.
All right, thank you. So, Core?
Yes, the appellant has mostly his analysis is based on the comparable that he picked. He picked the comparable that is right beside the subject, and that subject, I mean, that comparable is not the same. They are not the same. This is a Class A flexway house, and the comparable is a Class B, and it's just an office. The subject is a flex, it can be used both as an office and as a warehouse. And based on the income written out there, the equity comps right there, we have normally, this class of properties are all assessed based on income. And so we receive the income and expense. When we receive that, we analyze it. The subject has not been providing their reports, no retro, no information. So what we used was based on what we could see, what the market is saying, that this is what it is. So those comparable are comparable of the Class A warehouses that is similar to the property. And I also indicated that those ones, because we've been receiving their income and expense, we are able to analyze that and come up with $18 per square foot. You could see a little bit of discrepancy that could also show what they were able to get. It could be based on the year built, it could be the proximity, it could be location. So those slight changes in this very type, it's just showcasing the property, I mean the location, the year it was built, and any other factor based on the, and so the sale that he mentioned, these are all the sales in Loudoun County, and those are Class A sales. And again, our assessment is based on January 1st. What is the condition of this property as of January 1st of this year? So he is reflecting or talking about discount for lease up for the year. This is not yet known as of January 1st. This will be taken into account in the next reassessment. That is when we now take into account what is happening in 2025. As of 2024, it wasn't determined. The property was fully occupied, and as of January 1st, it is still occupied. And lastly, the cap rate there, you could see that we did not just use a cap rate in Loudoun County. We also utilize other sources to also account for any other thing that is happening. You could see we chose a cap rate of 7%, 7.05%. And in Loudoun County, our cap rates are way less than 6%. And if you also look at all the publications out there, we are still way, way below what the market is saying.
I think we, question for you, I think we did know on January 1st what the status of the building was, because the letter from GSA is dated November 27th. So the county, are for this purpose.
That's in his package?
That's in his package.
Oh, you didn't have this information?
No, we did not. That's not general, we did not. This is in his package.
Would you? You didn't get this for the appeal?
No, we did.
But we didn't know, as of 1/1/2025, we didn't know the tenant was leaving in March 2025.
But your decision would be reflective upon the with this information, would it not? So whether you knew it on January 1st, you're trying to correct any errors in the value of the property. And would this not be something to allow you to help correct any potential error?
It will, but we are trying to ascertain the value as of January 1st of 2025. So by the end of the year, they're supposedly supposed to send in their income and expense for this year.
So,
and then we would know what really happened, and
okay,
then give a discount.
So Jane, you got this package and this letter and decided it had no bearing.
Yes,
on
sir.
The value,
mm-hmm,
is what you're saying.
Yes.
Okay.
It will, if they're telling us by, you know, next year that the property was vacant from March until December because
no,
the tenant moved out and there was no new tenant coming in, that would be reflective of the next year's evaluation.
Okay.
So, and I'll come here somewhere. So we assess value as of January 1st, including all material facts. But we don't actually assess the value on January 1st. That's what we start with. Because right now, you've assessed the value. We could change it. So the value is not set until either we affirm what you assessed or if we change it. So that said, my question is, how do we address material facts that we know before the final assessment is done that would affect the assessment? This isn't the first time this has happened.
That's my
As a matter of fact,
comment.
I can think of maybe two cases since I've been on the board, I mean, a while ago, where this is similar circumstances. They were a long time ago, so I don't remember exactly what happened.
We don't know that this property is going to be vacant for the whole year come March. I mean, they may have a new tenant.
Okay.
You're assuming now that the property is going to be vacant for the remainder of the year if you're saying we need to change our assessment and only say that they're from January to March. We don't know that. They could sell it to a data center industry or some other you know, use.
Okay. And
that's
a great answer. No, that's a great answer. Mr. Pierce.
No,
okay.
I was going to give the same answer you just heard.
Okay.
It's a matter of trying to predict the future. We don't know. Information that's 2024 data is used for the assessment going into 2025. For example, if we took all the information you gave and said, oh, wow, it's going to be vacant after 3 months, and a month later he fills it right back up. I doubt the applicants, hey, we owe you a bunch of back taxes for last
year.
Right. I don't think that's going to happen. I think what will happen is the assessed value is based on 2024. 2025, if they move out and that building sits empty for the rest of the year, I think you'll find a dramatic change in that assessed value because the circumstances that you're concerned about will have come true. We don't know that yet. So I don't think we can make that assumption that it is going to be the case.
So to be fair, we haven't proposed that it's not going to make any income over 2025. That's not what we've
right.
done at all. We've said it's not going to have this tenant paying this rent for more than 3 months. We know they're leaving. So let's say the new tenant comes in April 1st, a day after GSA vacates. You know, they were on it, they signed a new tenant, got somebody in there April 1st. What's that lease going to look like? That's what we're doing here.
Right.
And we've said right across the street, they're saying $1,690 is market rent. They're saying $350 is market expenses. So that's what we're relying on. They're speculating rents are actually going to go up higher at this property and expenses are going to be half of the neighboring property. And to be fair, I do want to correct the record. CoStar does have these both as Class B properties, so it's not a difference in class. The county does have them both classified as commercial industrial and flex warehouses. So the county's website is reflecting comparable properties. And then as far as prior to the data value information, the Supreme Court of Virginia says not only can it come in, it must be considered. If the county's case were to be taken, we couldn't use any 2024 income and expenses. You know, that wouldn't be applicable. But what the Supreme Court has said is the exercises, as of January 1st, what will a buyer and a seller, knowing all the knowable information, would value this property? GSA leaving would be discovered. And then once you know that, let's assume somebody comes in April 1st. What are they going to pay? Are they going to pay, you know, $2 a foot more, or I'm sorry, $1.10 more than the comparable across the street? Are they going to have expenses that are $1.50 less a foot than the comp across the street? We're saying if how would you value this property knowing nothing about it other than you need to get a new tenant? What are they going to pay? Well, here's a comp right across the street. What are they paying? Here's a comp right across the street. What are the expenses there? You know, that's our case, is we have imputed income as if it's going to be earning income for 2025. But we're imputing market rates based on the comp next door.
And Mr. Few.
Jordan, a couple questions. Just more curious than anything, what was the rate that they were currently paying before they
GSA?
Came? Yeah.
They were paying $50 a foot.
Okay.
So that's, you know, obviously.
That's tremendous.
That's tremendous. And so when you're valuing it, you're looking at something.
Yeah, that's okay. And was it used as office space?
You know, I'm not certain on what they used it as. I tried looking briefly this morning and could not find an answer to that, so I can't answer.
All right. And last question. In your opinion, you've valued the improvements at $750,000, which is $10.20 a square foot for the improvement cost. Do you consider that to be a fair number?
That's an aggressive valuation.
I'm sorry. Honest answer. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you. My apologies.
That is... No. That's... You know, I did not put this one together, but that is, you know, I'd say that's fair to call it an aggressive value, but there's, you know, adjustments you can make. So the DFL, I just removed the DFL. It gets it to a total land and improvement value of 120. I would also, as I said at the start, probably add excess income for the 3 months GSA's paying that $50 a foot. So add that below the line also, so I can do that real quickly.
That
would
cover the whole year.
Yeah. So
I saw that. I was going to ask it too.
Yeah, I just want to point out again that this comparison of the subjects to the comparable, it is not the same. The comparable is an office building. This is an office and an industrial warehouse. It can be used for two uses at the same time. And this is an office, and we don't group them together. Even though Coastal may say what they say, but we have access to these properties and we know how they look like.
Is this property assessed as an office building or as an industrial building?
Subject property is an industrial warehouse.
Okay, that's good. That's good.
And to be fair, because the other building's being used as an office, the county has it classified as it could be used as industrial also. So just because the current tenant uses it as office doesn't make it a different type of
correct.
Building. And that assessment...
No. The being used as an office and an industrial means it already has the things built up for it. If it is an office, it is an office. You cannot have the same equipment in the same building. So currently it is being used as a flex. That flex means it is both used. You could either use it for just an office, just a warehouse, or both. But the other one he's comparing it with is just an office. You cannot use it as a warehouse.
So that's different than what both CoStar and the county's website shows. So I don't know what they're basing that statement on, but... CoStar has the comparable as a three-star flex. Loudoun County's website has the comp as commercial industrial flex warehouse. So I don't, you know, these are the sources I'm referring to, CoStar and the county's own website. I don't know where the county's getting their information from. I would like to, you know, I made some adjustments to this, and if you take out that DFL and then add the excess income, you get to a value of 128 a foot, which compares with the comp at 119 a foot.
Any other question? So, Mr. Hellman, there's no information about the rent information you are providing for the last few years. Is that true?
I can't testify as to if they've been filing. I don't contest the county statement. I'll put it that way. But I don't know if they've been filing or not.
Okay, this year, income.
This year they did include all the income and expense information going back 3 years.
Susan, could you pull up the public site, please?
And the second question, I'm assuming you're an attorney, right?
Yes.
What am I getting in?
22461 Shaw, Shaw. And then commercial on the left, and then just scroll down. So it's an office building.
And also, looking at these projections.
Can we go back to the first page, please? It shows commercial, industrial.
Yeah, hold on a second. There you go.
Yes. On page 4 of his report, we could see the 3-year operating history of the same property. So their NOI in 2022 was 1.5 million, about that. In 2023, they received a high NOI of 3.8, summarizing. And then in 2024, it's 2.964 and all that. And our assessment is based on 1.147, way below what they have been collecting over the past 3 years.
Yeah. And if I may point out on the county's website also, the county did testify as to this being a Class A building. You can see the comp is a B, but if you go to the subject, they have it classified as C. And just because the neighboring property is being used as office, if you go to their main page, the main profile page, they do have it classified as commercial industrial warehouse flex.
What's the address?
Which one?
Did you want me to check something else, Jordan? I'm sorry. A different one?
Yeah, if you...
2400 Show Road, Sterling.
22400. Thank you.
So there's the Class C. Is this the subject?
Yes.
And if you go to the main parcel or profile, it'll show commercial, industrial, and flex warehouse. So I don't know if the commercial tab is more of a distinction as to what it's being used as, and the profile is what it could be used as, but there is a discrepancy there. And I can't explain the county's website for that.
Okay. What does it say, state use code? What?
Commercial, industrial.
Right.
Okay. Like warehouse. Okay.
It's not a value driving descriptor or field. It may just be misnomered, but it doesn't have a value driven. It's not in the same group. It's not the same use. It's not the same. It's an office building has been finished to have bathrooms and staircase and offices and things like that. This flex warehouse is a different animal.
And when it gets a new tenant, it can be office also.
It could if they build it out.
Mm-hmm. And that's part of the DFL that we've imputed.
Well, we don't know.
Okay. Board members, do you have any further questions? Do I have a motion? Not yet. I'll ask a question of board members. Is there something that's missing for you to make a decision? All right, I'm going to make a motion. I move to affirm the Corps' assessment. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. Mr. Kier, second. So let me explain why. Well, Mr. Harmon, you said you didn't put the appeal together. You're just addressing it now. But, yeah, that $750 improvement is ridiculous. It makes no sense. When I look at the factors, I first of all, part of it is a disagreement on the comps to be used. And both parties keep going back and forth arguing that it is or is not something. However, if we're looking at the assessment that the county made and in the opinion, it only went up 2.7%. And I understand why they wouldn't make a change to the vacancy rate, even though they know that it will be vacant, because, well, not that they know, that it will be vacated by the current tenant, but they don't know if it will be filled by another tenant. And even if you say it's not until the end of the year. So it'll be addressed at that point because you will have an income statement that's provided for 2025 that will reflect what actually happened, and then the assessment at that point will be made based on that. So from that perspective, I think that the assessment seems reasonable. It seems that it falls within the parameters that the Corps is supposed to use. That it's not excessive and it doesn't stick out to me as something crazy. And in fact, I think that the owner's opinion is just, it's ridiculous. I'm sorry. It's just ridiculous. So there's really no justification for it that I can see, even with the loss of income. I don't see that. The only way I would see that is if it did truly go vacant for that whole year and then you come back and say, yeah, okay, the market truly has shown that nobody wants this place, then I can see that. So that's why I made the motion. Do any board members have any other comments or questions? All right, all those in favor of the motion, raise your hand and say aye.
Aye.
All right, that passes unanimously 5-0. And that was the last case, and so this hearing is adjourned.